Hello and welcome to the Drama and Language Teaching Podcast. This is a podcast for everyone interested in applying drama and theatre in educational contexts, more specifically, language teaching contexts. My name is Stephanie Giebert. I am the host and producer of this podcast. And again, it's been quite a while since I recorded the last episode. That's due to various reasons, mostly time being short on my part, which has something to do with me transitioning from teaching mostly at university to teaching in a secondary school, and which will also be the topic of a future podcast, but more about that another time. This time I am interviewing Modesto Corderi Novoa, who is from Spain and who is a teacher of Chinese, English, and Spanish, and also a teacher trainer. And I met Modesto in 2019 at the Drama and Education Summer School in Grenoble. And I have since experienced him as someone who is really good at applying games that we would consider classical improv games, for example, the gibberish interpreter, which will be mentioned later in the podcast, to language teaching contexts and to include them, for example, also as activities in process dramas. But more about that and more about Modesto's background and also his research now in the podcast. Great having you on the podcast. And I usually start by asking my guests to just introduce themselves briefly to tell us who they are and what their background is and where they currently work.
All right. So thanks for having me on the podcast. It's really an honor. I'm really, really happy. My name is Modesto Corderi Novoa. We have two surnames in Spain, one from the mother's side, one from the father's side. So it's kind of long. So my background is basically first I studied IT. I studied computer engineering in Spain. I'm from the northwest of Spain, the region called Galicia, which is north of Portugal on the Atlantic. And my hometown name is Orense, which is like means gold in Latin, aurum, because the Romans came and found gold. And they built the bridge, which is the famous Roman bridge. But, you know, I was trying for years, but I couldn't find any gold in my city. So I think they took it all. So I studied IT. But when I did IT, 1 year I spent in France abroad. And that year in France was very important because I was an Erasmus exchange student. I met so many people from different countries, specifically Asia, Japan, China, Australia, different parts. And that got me thinking about like languages and language learning and the importance of intercultural communication. But I was a computer guy, so I was learning computer programming, you know, languages to talk with a computer. But I thought I was a people person. So when I finished my degree in Spain, my IT, I became an IT engineer. I said, look, I want to do something completely different. So I applied for a university in Sydney. It's called University of New South Wales, UNSW. So I applied for a TESOL course, like teaching English as a second language. So for me, that was a big change. You know, all my family and my friends said, well, you're going to Australia? That's like a very long way from Spain. It's like 24-hour plane. But I just, you know, I got accepted. I went there and it changed my life. Like, because I got to see real communicative language teaching done by amazing teachers who use games, sometimes drama, sometimes watching videos, performance. For me, it was the first time to see that languages could be taught in a different way. Because for me, growing up in Spain in the 80s, in the 90s, our language classrooms in the schools, it doesn't matter if it's public or private, it's all like about translation, grammar translation method. It's about reading. It's about doing filling the gaps exercises. So for me, seeing that new way of teaching like opened my mind. And there in Australia, I decided I wanted to become a language teacher. I said, I don't want to be an IT engineer. I want to, you know, do this. And then where I was living in Sydney, I met a lot of Chinese friends. A lot of Asian people were there, specifically Chinese. So they convinced me to say, look, after you finish this TESOL, you should go to China because they want to need your skills of Spanish speaking teacher or an English teacher. So I said, all right, I'm going to China. So they helped me to get into a university called Beijing Language and Culture University. So from Sydney, I just flew to China. That was 2006, and that's a new, a new story that began there. So I stayed like in China. I first thought I'm gonna be for 1 year and see how it goes. In the end, I stayed there for 9 years. So in on those 9 years in Beijing, I did many things. First, I studied a degree, a Bachelor of Chinese Studies, Chinese Philology, for 4 years. Also, while doing my studies, I got a job as a Spanish teacher at the Cervantes Institute, which is the Spanish Camera Government official school in different countries. So I started teaching Spanish there. Also, when I was in Beijing, it was the first time I saw improvised theater. And that
Ah,
also changed
okay,
my
I
life
see.
because that was 2007. That was a key point for me. So one key point was leaving the IT and going to Australia in my life. And then another key point is going to China, and then in China, discovering like improv. I went to this show. My friend told me, "Look, this is a very different theater show. Come with us." And it was improvised. I didn't have a script. They were like four actors, and they were from the US, Canada, England. And it was amazing. I thought this is something extraordinary. So I want to learn this. And they have
So,
sometimes workshops. So
did you
I
see the
started
improv
learning.
in Chinese or in English?
It was in English. It was called the Beijing Improv Group. Yeah, Beijing Improv Group. But then I discovered they have another one in Chinese. So that was good for me to practice what I learned. But sometimes it's hard when I was, because at that time I was like second year student at university. So my Chinese was not so good. But when I became better, I joined them for the workshops. I follow their shows all the time. There was like improv festival. I go there, so I started to learn. And as I was teaching Spanish at the same time, I was learning Chinese at university. I was teaching Spanish, and then I was going to this improv show. So every time I go to a show, I took my little notebook and just write down the games, all the games they do, classical improv games. And then I was trying to make a connection. At the time, I didn't know, all the people who were doing that. I mean, when I was in China, but I was kind of trying to get this, and then trying to get more information on the internet and try to test some games. I thought these games work in my language classroom, so
I see.
I started like that, just
So you watched
trial and
and did a
error.
lot of improv and then figured out how you could apply these games to your classroom.
And then I
So.
finished my bachelor degree in China, and then I got a job at the Spanish Embassy. So I was working for the Ministry of Spanish Ministry of Foreign Affairs as a administrative or interpreter there. But anyway, I was always teaching also. I was always going to see improv. That was part of my life.
And you soon also started doing research on this, right? And embarked on your PhD journey.
And then I get a scholarship to do a master's of Chinese, teaching Chinese as a foreign language. So it was and my research started there in that master's with the use of improv or drama in the Chinese teaching, because I found there are not many studies or many papers or many people who are teaching Chinese using drama. But in English it's different, right? In English or German, there's many people. I
There's
didn't
more
know at the time.
research.
Yeah, and then I start to see, well, there's more people that, but in Chinese it's really a few. So I was trying to do that, and then when I finished my master's in China, I got a scholarship. I went to the US, I went to Washington, D.C., to teach Spanish at a university that was called George Washington University, and also to do some research. I wanted to do a PhD program. But the thing in the US, which is great for also improv, because first thing I did, I checked where it's improv in Washington, D.C., and they have the YIT, which is Washington Improv Theater. 14th Street, they have like a theater there. I also went to watch the workshops. Really good. I mean, the Americans are really, powerful with that. Like they're very creative with improv. So I spent 1 year in the US, but the thing is, I kind of missed China. I could not adapt to the US. Also, the scholarship they gave me, it was like only for the first semester, and then I have to pay like a lot of money because it's very expensive in the US to do a PhD.
No,
At
I'm.
that time, I said, like, the US is not my future. I'm gonna try to find a way. And part of me wanted to go back to China. Another part of me wanted to go to Spain to see how it goes. So I went first to Spain. On the summer, I went to China. I got accepted to work at the TV, CCTV, which is the national TV in China, to become a host. But then when I was in Spain, like my dad got sick. And also, I got a call from the Spanish Ministry of Education that they wanted Chinese teachers. So I say I'm going to stay in Spain. I didn't go back to China at that time. That was 2016.
And then you got the job that you're still working in now, is that right?
And then in Spain, I started working as a Chinese teacher for the local government, for the public schools, who are very special. I think there's only in Spain, not in other countries in Europe. This is called official public or public official language school. It's just it is like government gives money, a lot of money, because it's great. And then the tuition is really low, it's really cheap. But then we only teach languages, and it's not compulsory. You can choose to come or not. It's not like high school or do you have, and then we have people from different ages. Minimum age is 15, but we can have from 15 to 50 or 60 in the same class. So we have Chinese, we have German, English, French, Portuguese, Arabic, Russian. We have a lot of languages in school. So that's how I started, and it was really good. I really enjoyed teaching Chinese finally after all those years. Learning in China was my opportunity to come back to Spain and try to use drama. That was the thing, with all these things, let's put it all together and try to put it in action in the classroom. Yeah, that's what I was doing. I've been doing, and then I got the PhD in Spain. I applied for a program here, which is like very interesting because about a lot of our research. It was the Basque Country. They have very good university.
And what was your research about?
And my research topic was about the impact of performative language teaching on the oral skills in a Chinese as a foreign language classroom. It's kind of long, right? What I did is like I wanted to use a quantitative approach because I saw a lot of papers, a lot of people doing drama. They use qualitative, which is really good. It's okay, totally okay. But I wanted to kind of convince specifically some people who are skeptics about the benefits of
Yeah, we
drama
know
with
that.
numbers, right? In a way, of course, it's not a perfect, research. There's no perfect research, but with this, I follow studies from some Canadians and Brazilians that before what they did in their English classroom in using drama is that they did like some tasks, like for example, at the beginning, like pre-test and post-test
Post-test,
thing
yes.
with two groups, the control group, which has no drama training or no drama classroom, and the experimental group with the drama.
So that is what you also did in your study?
So they were all my students. So it was all controlled, same number of students each group in 2 different years. The teacher was the same, the curriculum, the textbook was the same, the classroom was the same, but the students were different. So this was like trying to make it like as much control as possible. And then the tasks were the same. So what we did is like we want to see my idea is like drama helps them or performative language teaching helps people to be more fluent in the language they're learning. So I say, okay, let's gonna study just overall focus on that on three things. One is fluency. The second is comprehensibility, which is fluency means you are, speaking like with, kind of number of words per minute, like,
Not
with not many
hesitating,
stops. Yeah,
yes.
exactly. Not being like broken. And then comprehensibility means that people are able to understand what you say.
That you're clear enough and
Yeah, clear,
articulate
exactly. And then
enough.
you have the third one, which is accent. Accent is, we all have an accent. Doesn't matter who you
Obviously,
are, you your own blah, but that accent is it too thick that maybe you cannot be understood, or is it like all right, or is so. So what we did is these three variables, we put it in a kind of a list, and then we give like a scale. So
A
from one
rating,
to
yeah,
nine, and then so this is okay, very fluent. We have the highest grade, or not fluent at all. So we have these scales, and then we recorded these four tasks. We have like one task about it was a picture description, yeah, in the first person. There was a story, and then you have to use Chinese, the students, at the beginning of the course, and use Chinese to say, okay, I was, so you have to become, it's a first person narration, it's a description story. Tell that in 1 minute, and then it was recorded. Task number two, it was also another picture description, but you have to use the third person because we wanted to compare in first person and third person. There's some different things happening, especially with memory and other things. So we want to have first person and third person.
So you also
So
had a
that was task number two.
neuroscience
No,
theory going on there?
we have to put in, I put it in my PhD something, but I'm not an expert on that. But it was like applied because some people did that. So, okay, I'm using these persons, they are the experts in psychology or that. And they said, they
That
recommend
you
to do this.
applied. some of
So
these
I yeah,
ideas.
so I follow them. I didn't everything make it from scratch, but yes, I choose some different stories. Yes, I used it in a Chinese classroom. That was the novelty of the study, the first in Chinese to be quantitative. Then we have task number three is a monologue. I tell them like, okay, well, tell me about your favorite city, and then they have to prepare, and then you have 1 minute to say monologue, no interruption. And then the last one, task number four, was a dialogue, a role play kind of thing. So I pretend to be the teacher who was doing the interview, a foreign student who arrived, a Chinese student who arrives in the city of Spain, and I have to ask some directions. And they pretend to be
Communicative.
like themselves, but they are trying to help this student. And that was improvised. There's no time.
No
So it's very
preparation.
important to have different types of tasks.
Yeah,
So you will
yes, of
know
course.
in which ones the fluency is more or less and why. Some tasks are easier. For example, when you're doing the interaction, the dialogue, usually it's more fluent because you have the teacher or the other person, the native, to help you to talk, like a scaffolding. Monologue is more difficult because you are on your own, right? So for we tried to that. So we did these four tasks. We designed that. So we did pre-test and post-test to all the groups. So group control. So we have all these tests on. When we do the test, we record everything, the audio. And this audio, we will send all the pieces of audio to native Chinese speakers that we call raters or judges. The raters will listen to this using the computer, and then they will put the grade. So according to fluency, comprehensibility, and accent to each of these recordings. And we have 75 raters, which is a lot,
It was
that we're doing
75.
this job.
Wow.
75 raters, yeah. But I designed like a in software thing. It was online. I send them. It's like the students had a form, so they when they do the task, I was recording them. But then these audios, I put them online, and this software, you can send it and put it in a form, so it was easy for the raters to see the picture, for example, and the recording, and then grade, and then that was sent to me, so all the data. So that was, a lot of work. It was a lot of work to use the quantitative approach, but in the end, we saw clearly that in terms of, for example, fluency or comprehensibility, the group who did drama was had higher scores than the group who didn't do drama. That was very clear.
Oh,
But for accent, we found out there was no such much difference. So we think accent maybe is not affected that much, but fluency, yes. And
And
there
there
were
was
also
statistically significant findings.
exactly, yeah. And then we also analyzed not only that change, we analyzed like both groups at the beginning of the intervention, did they have the same level? And yes, they have the same level. That's very important to have two groups that have the same level at the beginning of the intervention. And then we have at the end, we also studied, there's a difference in these two groups. So that was a lot of work, but I had a very good like supervisor, Maria Pilar Garcia Mayo, who she's like, doing all the time this task in English language mainly, but she's like really amazing for that. And for me, it was like my first like PhD experience, right? Like we all have sometimes. But what I try to contribute is to say, look, drama works, performative language teaching works, at least work for these groups, which is, of course, it's just an experiment. It doesn't kind of be generalized to everything. But look, there's so many other people who have done this, so many studies, and most of them, they say like drama is positive. Let's say that, just keep it simple. And now what I do is the same. I try to do much teacher training, helping teachers from different parts of the world, maybe Chinese, maybe Spanish, whatever, to do learn some activities, some improv games, some drama activities they can use in the language classroom.
So you're mainly a teacher trainer now?
What I do, I work as a teacher, a language teacher, still at school, but when I have time,
So at the school that you
after
mentioned
work.
before,
Yeah,
where
at the
you
official
have
school, the
these
public, yes,
public
exactly. It's
school.
called EEOI, or like in Spanish, like EOI, which is the official school, a La Coruña.
These
So mainly
language school.
language school, yeah, public language school. And then we have only one here, but in big cities like Madrid or Barcelona, they have maybe two or three or four. But usually, every Spanish city, they will have at least one of these schools.
So there are new
You
teachers for that.
pay, yeah, exactly. You pay 120 euros per year, and you get like 4 hours a week
Well, that's
of language classes. Yeah,
good offer.
it's very good. It's actually, paid by the government, most of it. So, yeah.
Okay, and so you work in both roles as a teacher and as a teacher trainer.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Are you still doing research nowadays?
I'll do more like teaching training.
You're a
So some of the
practitioner more.
papers I published recently, like, well, I mean, last year and in the Scenario and other journals, is more about performing. So about like this paper is kind of we have an idea that we do a research, but we also provide some activities that are very concrete. I mean, activities for the teachers to follow in their classroom. So I think that's maybe I'm not gonna do some like obscure numbers, statistics, and that. I think I want to do something that is useful for the community, for the teachers,
More hands-on, yeah.
and apply my experience with some simple games that I'm taking from improv or some of them I just have some idea, whatever. But and then putting a context
Yeah, which you do very well, as I experienced also in Padova
that
recently. If you would like to read Modesto's window of practice article in the Scenario Journal, which mentions several of the improv games mentioned in this podcast, you can find the link to this in the show notes. And yeah, it will be mentioned again later in the podcast. Maybe you can tell me a little bit about that workshop, because I guess that's the way you usually work. So you have a context and then you apply drama conventions to it. Would you like to tell me a little more about that specific example of the
Yeah,
Sun
yeah.
Mao
So,
story?
the thing is, I have like my idea, my approach is try to get some specific games that are taken from drama or improvised theater, put it in a context, in a real story, or in a, something that related to everyday life, put it very simple that any student can relate to, and then create like this kind of could be process drama or teaching role. Sometimes it's not, or like. Put them in a context with drama in the classroom and put the students to do those things with the purpose of learning and practicing some vocabulary or grammar, but also to perform. For example, one example I do is the airport game. I put my students that are beginners, they learn the numbers, the name of the countries, beginners. Like we create an airport in the classroom with our check-in, we have like security control, and then we put the language, and then we do like this drama, maybe
Like a
sometimes dress up as a
simulation
policeman.
of a
Yeah, situation
location.
that it's very simple. Then they get the boarding pass, and then they have the number of the flight number, they have the country where they're flying to, their seat number, and all these is going to be used in the future. Maybe a listening activity, maybe whatever. Another example, what I did for a scenario conference before was called the Camino de Santiago, which is the San James, the way, right? So the pilgrims walk from different parts of the world, maybe start from France, maybe from Spain. And the goal is to arrive at Santiago de Compostela, the big cathedral near where I live, right? And then on the way, you have to do some tasks, some games. But it's like you are a pilgrim, and these things that you do are things that you do every day. But we have to put the language and drama together, and it's very interesting. Students really like this game also.
So is
And
that
for
something you
Paro,
did for Chinese or English or Spanish or all of it?
It could be any languages.
Any
When
language.
I write these 8 articles, I put them so any language could be used. You can learn Spanish, you can learn English or Chinese. I did it with Chinese and Spanish because that's what I teach. You could teach German, you could teach the game is the same, but you want to change the language you use. You could be a German pilgrim, right? So maybe you speak German and sometimes happen. And then you asked me about Padova. Yeah, the Padova like summer school that it was like last week. Yeah, we had like also opportunity to present. I was lucky to be able to present a workshop that I call Performing Sun Mao. Okay, Sun Mao is a Chinese nickname for a Chinese writer, a woman. Sun Mao is she was born in China in the 40s, but then. She the family because of the war they moved to Taiwan, right? Her official name is Echo Chen, right, or Chen Ping. So, but everybody calls her Sun Mao because of a comic character she liked. Anyway, so Sun Mao is actually or was one of the greatest like contemporary writers that China has, especially about the
I
genre
was
of like
totally not
traveling.
aware of that.
Yeah,
I'd
the
never heard
problem
of
is
it.
like she's so big in China or in Asia, but she's not really known in Europe or even in Spain. So Sun Mao was since she was a girl, she loved writing. She has this like humanity. She's able to see big things. She's very, very funny sometimes, and very smart, right? So she when she she gets in love with a German professor, and then she went to Germany. This professor dies of a heart attack, I think. And so she's very sad, but she goes and she wants to change the completely not Taiwan, not Germany, and she comes to Spain, she comes to Madrid in the 60s or 70s. And then she meets there because her family from China had a friend who was also a Chinese cook at the embassy or at a restaurant there in Madrid. She lives in a building, and the neighbors also know these people. They're all friends. And one of the neighbors is called Jose Maria, who is six, seven years younger than her at that time. But he fell in love with her. She's like crazy in love with somehow, but he's too young. Right? He shows, and the friends around her. She's like, and then he tells somehow, says, look, I'm going to do the military service, but when I finish, I go back. I would like to marry you, just like that. You know?
Oh, that's the story. Okay.
So it's a very interesting, yeah. And then somehow was joking, saying, okay, let's see. So they stay apart for several years. They meet again several years ago, and then this Jose Maria is a man now. From a boy, he becomes a man with a beard and everything.
Yeah, I
and,
saw the pictures you showed
yeah,
during the workshop.
So you see this, and then they are together. They're a couple, like girlfriend and boyfriend. And he gets a job because at the time, the west part of Sahara was a Spanish colony. And the city was called El Ayun, which is on the coast. And then he gets a job because he's a diver. That's his diver working under water, so for a company there. So he first goes there and then says, somehow come, and somehow says, okay, I'm going. And for somehow, like arriving at the Sahara is a big cultural shock for her. But
yeah,
it's also
yeah.
an opportunity, yeah, because she always loves adventures. And that was the great adventure. So she writes a book there in the 70s, 74, 70, living with her husband, Spanish husband, in Sahara,
What a
being the
combination,
only
yeah.
Chinese person there, and writing, you know, she was writing these articles and sending to Taiwan to a newspaper, and they published this. In the end, they make a book, and now it's translated into English called Stories of the Sahara, also in Spanish, Diarios del Sahara. So this is like this book makes people dream, especially Chinese people who at that time could not travel to other countries
Yeah.
freely.
Yeah.
So for them, seeing Sa Mao is amazing, right? All the stories.
Yeah.
So what I did is I got this real story.
And
I got the book.
Just before you go into more details, which I'm curious about as well, since when are you using this for your teaching? So have you used it for a longer time, or is it something that's a little more recent?
Somehow, I mean, I knew somehow from, you know, some many years ago when I was in China, because I was interested in this, because in a way it's a connection with China and Spain, because her husband is Spanish. So we can see it's like a love story between China and Spain, or Spain and China. And so when I was in China doing my master's, I was doing other games. I didn't use somehow. But then when I started doing teacher training 2016-17, that was the first time I used somehow for a group of teachers that were Chinese from the Confucius Institute in the south of Spain, Andalusia. I did this workshop. They called me, the government called me, look, Moni, we'd like you to do a, you know, a teacher training session for all these young Chinese teachers who are going to work in Spain for 1 year, 2 years, teaching kids, and they don't know how to use a lot of methodology, you know, in Spain. So I say, okay, let's do that. And then I used that game. And then the game where, like, the teachers, we have to do this whole drama, process drama about somehow. They all knew somehow, which is easier because they're most all Chinese, maybe 99% of Chinese should know somehow, especially if you are interested in the Spanish culture. So that, but that time was different what I do now. That time was more focused on the maybe reading and writing and then talking sometimes. But now, the last
it's
workshop that I
evolved.
did, like, 7 years ago, I mean, after 7 years, it's evolving. So I never teach the same class twice. I try to put some new things, but probably you do the same. But
similar,
okay, in part about what I thought is, look, I'm going to have really good teachers that know a lot about drama. These people are professional teachers. There is not like teacher training for beginners or for, no, these people are good. So and this is in an afternoon thing. So it has to be, I don't know, it has to be something kind of dynamic. I don't want to put too much theory. So I'm going to do it just like process drama story. Make the context and change a lot. Try to put at least 10 games in the 2 hours.
Yeah, there were a lot of games, so it was very
There were a lot of games, like you did when you did the like presentation the first day in the you remember in the meeting room. That was also good. You have the improv games, the Tableau with Eva. You were that's perfect. Also, I love that. So what I want is I put real part, like I put some text. I don't want to put too much text because the text, but I put like just one presentation, just maybe one paragraph. Taken from the novel, and then focusing on different aspects of her life or their life in Sahara that were all true from the novel. And these will give us kind of a pretext or some ideas for the next game we're going to play. And they will all be independent, but they're also connected.
Yeah, absolutely.
They're independent in the sense that every text has a game, And then when we finish, we'll do another text, another game. It's kind of chapters in the books. I got some, actually some of the texts are or parts of my workshop are also named after chapters in the her book. So I choose some of them because you don't have time for all of them. I choose some of them first, like arriving at the Sahara. So the concept of the Sahara is really, really powerful for drama. You can do many things. It's a desert, right? We never had maybe the chance to be there or to let's experience that. So maybe physical, maybe with sound, maybe with creating the space, maybe with these games like I am a tree, but apply for the Sahara. Maybe with a game like I see, and then you describe something in the space. We have a large group of teachers. We're more than 20 teachers. So I try to divide the class in two at the beginning. You are describing the Sahara, and the others, you are part of the Sahara. You become the Sahara. So that this is the becoming. So you can do with any place, any story. There's going to be a
Scene
location,
painting.
right? It's that scene painting, sound painting, and then we did the sound painting game, right? So we saw, okay,
We
now
had to
I got you a
guess.
map. Yeah,
Yeah. And
exactly. So a
the
real map.
blindfold idea was quite interesting, I thought. I have never tried that with anything like that with my students. Have you tried blindfolding with
Yeah, I do
regular
it all the
students?
time. I do
Oh,
it,
wow.
I do it all the time, man, because it's good for the students to, do something different. And it's a vocabulary review in the end. What you're doing is like you're getting a list of words. But when you are deprived of your sight, then you have to actually, your brain activates more other senses, maybe the hearing. That's the point of the game, right? And then when you're a group, so for example, this game is very simple. You say, okay, let's do a location. And then we got this city in Sahara, that was a real city. I put a map of the city in the 17, 1974. I said, look, what you can find in the city. And then I got the text from somehow where she was describing some locations of the city. And then we just analyzed the text and get, okay, there's a casino, there's a hotel. There is a supermarket, and then you make it up. What do you think is going to be in a city? Any city has a hospital usually, right? Any city has a school, so
But
we get
not
some
every city
order.
has a sand dune.
Yeah, exactly. The sand dune was great because that was like one of the highlights because we are in the Sahara. So yeah, there's some things
But
that you
yeah.
have in the Sahara. Well, anyway, so what I did is like divide, split the groups of three or four who are going to be the performers of the
The
sounds.
sounds,
I
yes.
have us, yes, and then I give them like a paper. It's very important to have the paper. Don't say it because if you say it, the other people are going to listen, or you can write it in the blackboard. But the people with the blindfolds, they will not see it. And then they were just walking around the city and different parts. And then
Yeah,
every
there's an
city,
element of
like every part,
suspense also, I
they
guess,
were
when
like,
you
what's
have
going to
to,
happen now? And then
where am
the
I
sounds.
and will they guess it?
Anyway, and the game also you can play with words, which is another option. Instead of just sounds, you can add words. The problem with words is when you have a lot of people together. If they speak at the same time, right? Maybe they just like cancel and it's like a too, messy.
Too
So,
noisy, yeah.
or you can do first sounds, 30 seconds, and then you allow them 30 seconds for words, or only sounds, only words. It's up to you. This is a very simple game again. So what I want is the teachers to experience it. So that's what we did. We
Yeah,
would
it
play
was
that
very
game. Yeah.
memorable.
People were having fun. Yeah, and then we also talk about, for example, the house where they live, like a house, right? We talk, this is also a location for so many things.
Yeah,
In the novel,
rooms
she's talking about,
and
so we have
objects.
exactly, so obviously that, and then we have the map of the house, and then we have the pictures of them in the house, real pictures, real map. So when you think this is not something I made up, it's something taken from this novel, and we are making it like something performative. You can do this with any novels, any novel in any language or any story.
Yeah,
You're going
that's
to need a
true.
location, you're going to need like, yeah. And then mind is important. Maybe sound is important. Not only focus on just language, which is like, yes, we did after, but some games, but not all the games. So I wanted to tell the teachers, look, language is much more than words. Like somebody said, we have a body before we have a language. So see, also another game I like to do is the game about like the loop game.
Yeah.
I
That
did
we
it
did
for
at
the
the
Camino
towards the end,
Santiago.
yes.
Yeah, I did it for the other papers. And the loop was, imagine you are somehow, you're Jose Maria, what is your life? Every one day in your life. And pick three activities that you do every day and that's repeat. So that was also interesting. And also another thing we did that is very funny is like creating characters from nothing. It's like you put like a song of 30 seconds and then ask somebody to go in front of the rest of the audience, classmates, and do something without talking, like very simple, like very natural, do some action. And then we stop that after 30 seconds, and then we're going to ask this question, like, what's the person's name? And then the students will give some suggestions and say, okay, Mary, Tommy, and then the actor will
The
pick
actor
one.
picks.
Yeah, the actor picks because they're gonna perform later. So, make them like comfortable, right? And then or not, maybe they want to pick a different hard choice. So it's all funny. And then so name, where are you from? How old are you? How is she? What do you do? And then these four questions that are very simple, A1 level, A2 level. But then we've had two more questions that have this like dramatic tension, make it more interesting, the character, deeper character. And
More
that's like
drama.
what exactly more drama. So the fifth question is like, what is her or his dream? Or what is your dream? Wow, when you're thinking about dream, there has to be something big, right? So everybody's getting that. Maybe they're listening before to their name, to the age, and so to be related. And the last question is, what is your secret? It's something you don't want people to know. And that's something, the dream and the secret, they create like a deeper character in like 30 seconds. So this is technique you can use also to create interesting characters. And then these two, three, four characters that you created, you can use for performing, whatever, or learning some grammar structure or another game. But these characters are, you know who they are. So, and then because we all went through them, and that's much interesting. You don't have to, because when you do improv, the problem sometimes is like, okay, who are you? Because when you improvise, you don't know. You have to say, hey, hi, mom. So you already assign like a role to the, but if you don't say it, people in the audience are, the brain is like, okay, but I know what they're doing, but who are they? So you have to be very clear. And with this game, you already have the who, the character.
That helps also s players who are not maybe not experienced improv players to get a character going, and the class will be curious about dreams and secrets and how the characters are gonna interact, because that's what also what we did. We had two characters with their respective secrets, and they met and they interacted. Yeah,
Yeah,
that
they
was.
interact, and you can do different games of interaction. Like we did this game that were like back to back. The two of them had to do a dialogue. They're gonna get married because that was like the marriage thing. And the person in the back, like who is not facing the audience, is the one they talk. And the persons who are facing the audience in their back, they're pretending trying to follow, like make gestures, like move the mouth. And that's really funny too. That one.
That's also can be also challenging because it's a listening game as well, because you have if
It's
you're
listening
not the one
game, yeah.
talking, you need to be listening very closely to what your partner is saying.
Exactly, you have to listen all the time. Yeah. So yeah. I mean, so that's the power of drama. You try to you get any story and you make it like in a way as a game, or but it's also close to real life. I mean, it is a game. Drama is a game, yes, but this game takes us closer to real context, real life. And then one day, maybe when we are in that situation, in real life, we remember that in our drama classroom we did this role, and I said this and that, and maybe I can. Be more confident, and I think we need more, as you say, like drama in the classroom, because some of the classrooms are focused only on the exams or grammar or reading, writing, and drama could be maybe one game a day or two games, 10 minutes. You don't have to do all the class drama, obviously, but put some drama at the end or at the beginning as a warm up or something like that, as a review of what you study. Then the change, there will be a big change for positive change for the classroom.
And as you said, it can be integrated also with reading, for example, if you use a novel as a pretext, if
Exactly.
you
I mean,
want,
well,
if you want
if you
that.
want, you can do reading. In my case, because we don't have time, I just put
Obviously
it
not.
there. I put the English thing, and then we just read it. But yeah, one person, like we were changing. Okay, please, you read next. So you were reading to get this idea, but obviously we were not. Actually, it's not a reading class. It's more like
No,
a drama. But
but you could integrate that if
you
you
could get
had.
a German grammar. I mean, sorry, German like a novel, and get a part of that. It's gonna read, analyze, and then maybe use drama. So yeah. I mean, reading is important, of course, yeah.
No, just pointing out, if I mean if you have an A1 class, obviously you won't be doing that much reading, but if you have a more advanced class, you could kind of integrate longer passages of reading with drama, games, and
Yes.
activities, and still follow the story. So it's also not just an isolated drama game if you integrate it like that, because that's sometimes what I find with that the game seems to be too isolated. But if you can tie it in with a story, that's actually pretty clever. That's a pretty good
Yeah,
idea.
exactly. I mean, we have like maybe so many games in our heads as drama teachers, and then we have to find one or two that are like kind of connected to what we want to learn, right? And they're all connected to this story or this situation. So There's always like location. There's always characters. There's always a story. There's three, right? So this will be different vocabulary goals. But location is more about nouns or prepositions or adjectives and that. But you have like characters. We have a lot of things we can put, like physical description, character, personal information. Also, we have this story. In the story, we have all these connectors, the tenses.
Oh yes.
So yeah, but any novel, any story has this. You have where it happens, who is doing or what they're doing, right? So or how or when you have somebody all decide or why. So you have these like simple questions, but it could be developed into drama.
Yeah, that's I'll sure also I'll be sure to also apply some of your ideas from the workshop in my own teaching next year, I hope. But yeah. Another thing I wanted to ask you about was because you said many of your process dramas or your kind of co yeah concepts can be done in any language, but have you observed that, for example, for Chinese or for example for Spanish, that there are certain, let's say, certain activities that work especially well, or where you have certain language points where you found a game that works really great for this grammar or language or pronunciation point?
Well, I tell you some games that work for any language because I use them in both Spanish, because I also used to teach Spanish as a second language, and Chinese. For example, the game of the loop, this thing, when you're doing like three activities, you are actually not talking that much. It's more about performing. And at the end, you have to choose three activities, and you say it in Chinese and Spanish. That's perfect for connectors
For
for
either language,
verbs.
yeah, for any
Yeah,
language, yeah.
exactly. Then another one game, like for example, I am a tree. That game is
That
works also
works.
perfect with any
Yes.
language. In Chinese, it's also good because you can practice what they call the measure words. Measure words are kind of something you put between the number and the noun. It's like two cars or two dogs or one dog. You need to put something extra in Chinese. So
Okay.
not just yeah. So we always say like a dog, a cat, but in Chinese you have to put a something measure word dog.
Okay.
So yeah. So with this game, we practice that more. Maybe less in Spanish, but in Spanish it's just nouns. But in Chinese, you practice more. The game of the interpreters we played in just like the nomad tribe leaders, which is the game interpreter and
That we
experts, the
did in the
expert game.
workshop, yes.
With the word, which is a classic game, everybody knows.
Yes,
The
yeah, in
that
improv.
works at automatically for because it adapts to the level of the students. If you are C2 level or A1 level, doesn't matter, you can play the game. Obviously, what do you say, like the output of the interpreters when they translate, it's gonna be their level. But it works. And it works for Spanish, for Chinese, probably for English. So I think most of the games could be
You
used
can
both. Like
adapt them for most any language.
The game we were playing in the house, where you have to do mime, enter the house, and then everybody, like when you do one mime, one student, and then the next student has to remember the previous mime and then put another one, like always like that, 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 that. That could be anything. Like, and then you put the narrator or asking from outside using the language. So anyway, I think most of the good thing, like if you go to this paper about performing El Camino and the scenario, just like this. Just a list of ideas, but I'm not telling you which
And that is a
language.
published article, right? So I could also put that in the show notes of the workshop,
I'll send
of
you,
the workshop,
and
the
then,
podcast.
So this, for example, and then I did another one with Erica Piazzoli and Zoe Hogan. Erica, so this paper we did is called Performing Yuanfeng. Yuanfeng is also a Chinese concept of destiny, kind of very to meet people. So in this paper, we also have the loop, we also have some ideas of creating characters, but it is not about any language. Actually, in the paper we have what we call untranslatable words, words that cannot be
Was
translated.
that
Yeah,
what you
maybe you heard.
presented in Dublin this year?
Yes, exactly. So this one, I'll send you both the links. This is the open access, and then there you have like okay, some ideas, but we don't say that any language. We don't say, hey, you have to teach German grammar here or Portuguese, whatever. No, there's ideas that could work with any language. That's specifically what we wanted, to be very open.
I'm wondering because I'm also sometimes do a bit of teacher training with sort of for performative language teaching, And usually the teachers I have are quite creative, but also sometimes I have teachers say, oh, how do you come up with these ideas? I mean, how do I get the idea of how I can combine, I don't know, a certain grammar point with a certain game? Do you have any advice for teachers, or is it just something that comes through experience and
Well, of course, experience is important. I think the best, I mean, if you have in your hometown some like school that they teach improvised theater, go and see, try a class, see if you like it, and if you like, you join them. Just not for the the language teaching part, but for the drama thing, because in these games they play, maybe you find some ideas and inspiration. That's what I do. I join a local improv group. We are not professionals, but we just meet once a week and we just explore and do, you know, we have a teacher who is like a drama guy, but they don't know how to teach language, for example. But then we have this different mind, right? We are language teachers, so we always try to find the connection. So first advice number one, if possible, I would you know, I would say try to join an improv class. Yeah, that was great. Now advice number two, if you want to be creative, that like look at other people what they're doing, right? So they might inspire you. Maybe conferences, maybe online seminars, you know, drama education, summer school scenario. Go for that. And also see papers, and maybe you get a number three, get inspiration from the culture, like contemporary culture around that. For example, any movie, any TV show, any comedian, any sketches that maybe groups do in German or in America, in whatever. This could be also a source of inspiration. You can find some ideas from these, you know, funny sketches or humor. So, first, let's
Like
join
you
an
did
improv
with
class.
the yes.
Yeah,
Go
join
ahead.
improv and watch improv. Watch theater. The more theater you watch, because maybe this theater show is not for language learning, but maybe they do this activity or the way they present the sound, the actors, the clothes, give you an idea for your classroom. So try to go to improv class, try to watch theater in general or improv shows, go to the theater and then get ideas. Then I think that would be very important. See and follow all these like you know, researchers or other teachers, go to the teacher training. It's always good to learn from, you know, other classmates or I mean colleagues. And then also I would say follow the mainstream or the not mainstream, but just like contemporary culture in different languages about comedy, because or maybe not comedy, could be a very good like short film that lasts 5 minutes, but it's really funny or it's really interesting, very deep. Maybe I can use this as a pretext for my classroom. So try to get all this information from, you know, the internet, which has like so many resources like YouTube, so Instagram, TikTok. Maybe from there you're gonna find something, you know, that. And then keep your brain active, because being creative, you need to be your brain kind of, you know, get enough sleep, eat well, so your brain is healthy and active, and then you will have more ideas. Sorry. So be happy, try to be happy, do things that you like. Don't get too obsessed about drama also. You know, you have to do things, go for a walk in the sunshine, go to the beach, go traveling, meet some friends, have a dinner outside, whatever. Do something. So when you're happy, your brain is also kind of ready for these maybe ideas. If you have depression, you are sad, if you're too stressed, obviously you're not going to create maybe nothing, because you are, you know, your brain is in a different mode. So for you will find inspiration, you know, you will find
Okay, thank you.
it.
Okay, and maybe yeah, I would actually kind of wrap up now. Thank you
Okay.
for your very story, how it all came together for you, and about your research and a bit about how you currently work. So thanks a lot for agreeing to
Thanks
be on
for
the
having me, you
podcast.
know, and thanks for organizing you and Eva the you know, Dharma Education Days. I was like, that really one is inspiration for me and for many teachers, that what the work you're doing. So I'd like to thank you again.
Well, thank you too. So that's it for today. Thank you for listening. One more announcement. We are currently planning the Online Drama and Education Days 2024. If you're interested in that, come to our website www.dramapädagogik.de. You can find the link in the show notes. And the conference, the online conference, is going to be on the 25th and 26th of October, and probably more on that in the next podcast episode as well. Have a great day, or evening, or night. Take care, and bye-bye.